Hello and welcome to another episode of FPL 360. Today, Chuck and I are going to start talking about what's going on with Manchester United because I was on a real high note after Saturday morning, and then Jose Mourinho decided to, I don't know what, against Sevilla. I'm still trying to figure out why that it was just so terrible to watch from all aspects.
It seemed like he just showed up without wanting to attack at all against a very frail defensive team.
And I mean, on one hand, they're coming off the win against Liverpool where, I mean, they played narrow at the back. I liked the lineup. Rashford, speed, played a hand pretty much the entire game. Lukaku looked great. Without Pogba, we looked fine, even though we got outpassed and outpossessed by two, I think, in both categories, pretty much. It was great to see Rashford back, but he just didn't have... I don't know if he just fell in love with what he did against Liverpool and didn't think he had to make a change, and maybe it has something to do with him being overconfident and thinking that the name Manchester United was going to be enough to give us a win in the Champions League. Because that's the only thing I could think of, is just complacency with the win against Liverpool and then not being prepared for an opponent who I'm going to go ahead and say I don't think he really respected that much.
Yeah, but then what do you make of his quote after the game with the I've sat in this chair twice before with Porto, Man United out, with Real, Man United out. So this is nothing new for this football club.
Yeah, I think first of all, I think he's a psychopath. Like, I would love to know what his thoughts sound like to himself when he's just driving in his car. But I thought the weirdest thing was how they responded after going behind with the second goal. I made a joke to one of my friends who was texting me. I said, oh, perfect, we'll let them score like three more, and then eventually we'll just catch up. But it just seemed like they had no idea the game started until halfway through the second half. I will say, though, I thought Lukaku played well. But outside of that and Sanchez having a couple nice cruise control touches, it just wasn't there from top to bottom.
Yeah, I mean...
When your best opportunity comes from Fellaini on his left foot, I mean, that's a humongous telling sign of what was going to happen throughout that match.
Lately, you can make the argument that Lukaku's been the most consistent United player.
I mean, he was excellent against Liverpool, and he, again, was really good against Sevilla. Just no one else showed up to play with him. And I don't know how really to judge these two results because he was getting hailed as a genius for what he did this weekend, and now people are calling for his head. I'm somewhere in the middle because I was already done with him before this week, and it really hasn't swayed me either way. I just don't know what to do.
Without an FA Cup at this point, you kind of have to call for his head.
But, I think it comes down to he wants to do his thing. And if he doesn't have the guys to let his style work the right way, then he just plugs people in whether they work or not.
But he purchased these guys. Like, you can't really make the argument that you don't have your guys when you've spent as much money as Mourinho has.
So Pogba. Oh, sorry. Yeah. Pogba, Lukaku, Bailly.
Sanchez.
And for a guy who prides himself on being a defensive coach who can set up against anyone and get a result, he hasn't addressed the fact that, all right, Antonio Valencia is awesome. Ashley Young, that's not good enough. That's not cutting it.
But Luke Shaw is such a great left back.
He doesn't even rate him. I mean,
I'm just using Mourinho's words there. I know that he doesn't rate him. I just struggle to comprehend how he thinks that old man Ashley Young should still be out there.
If I ever get a chance to interview one manager, I want it to be Mourinho. And I just want to sit him down. I won't be rude about it and just say, Jose, I get it. You think you're really smart. Can you explain to me why almost once out of every five matches, everyone in the entire world thinks you're a psychopath and looks like you have no idea what you're doing? I just would love to hear what he has to say to
Don't kid yourself. You'd sit Jose down and then you'd just immediately start screaming at him about his lineup decisions.
Launch myself over the table. But enough about my indecisive love-hate relationship with Manchester United. Chuck's boys lost the best forward in the world, Harry Kane, to a knee ligament injury. So while this is a big loss for Tottenham, I want to say it's just overdue because he was due to miss time at some point.
But I am currently drinking a beer while we record this podcast due to the fact that this is just a subject that makes me sad because couldn't have been a worse time for him to go down right now.
I mean, looking at his impact, there's no shortage of talent in that team that can fill the void without him. I guess, who do you think the biggest guy in terms of minutes played is going to be with him out? And who do you think is going to have, I guess, the biggest role stepping up in the goals department?
Well, I mean, number one is the fact that this team now literally runs through Christian Eriksen and Heung-Min Son because Llorente is not good enough to play significant minutes in these upcoming games for Spurs, whereas Son's at least a tricky enough forward that even if he doesn't score, he'll open up space for everyone else. And Eriksen's just going to have to be ruthless from outside the box to open up space.
What kind of formation do you see them using? Do you see them sticking with what they've been doing or maybe tweaking it a bit just to cope without
I
Kane?
assume you'll just see a 4-2-3-1. Like nothing too ridiculous, just with Son as your central forward, and it'll really operate more like a 4-2-3-1, 4-3-3 hybrid. But for the most part, it's just going to be a 4-2-3-1.
Yeah, I mean, you guys, like, we are out of the Champions League, so we don't have to worry about that competition. And at the end of the day, it's all about fighting for top four. I mean, the cup competition would be nice,
And
but.
the next match is huge versus Chelsea.
Yeah, that too. So, a lot to consider for Pochettino, but I don't think you guys should be too concerned because at least your coach isn't a psychopath.
But the big thing is going to be, does he prefer Eric Lamela or Lucas Moura?
That is a good question. I
Because those
mean,
are the two players that have the most minutes to gain from this injury.
yeah, I mean, I would lean towards Moura just because it's a perfect time to throw him in the mix and see what they have in him. I mean, they weren't anticipating it being like this, but moving ahead for next
It's
season.
just due to the fact that I assume that Aurier is the first choice right back.
Yeah, I
I
mean,
think
he's
we're at the
proven it.
point where we can safely assume that. So I think just due to their chemistry together, it'd be almost stupid not to play more. Like LaMelo obviously come off the bench, but the big thing that LaMelo has that Mora doesn't is that LaMelo can come off the bench and play centrally.
I mean, I don't really know how Pochettino will want to divvy it up, but I don't really see why there wouldn't be a scenario where one of the guys plays 60 minutes, 65, and then the other guy comes off the bench and they just rotate.
Yeah, I mean, that's what I assume. I just think this is kind of where Lamella's versatility kind of holds him back. Because in the midfield, in the attacking three, he can play any of those three spots, whereas you're really just going to see Moro on the right.
Yeah, I don't, from what I've seen, I've never seen him play in a central role. Even when he plays in a more advanced attacking midfield role, it's always been out in the wing.
It's really only when he comes off the bench when Eriksen's floating, he'll cut inside sometimes because his passing is good enough that he can still operate centrally.
Yeah, well, moving on from how depressed have our clubs made us. Today, we are going to talk about the infamous blank game week 31. There will only be four fixtures this week, with the FA Cup quarterfinals causing the other six to be postponed. The thing on everyone's manager's minds is, do I have my free hit chip and how can I use it? So, Chuck, we've engaged in some fun banter on Twitter about this, but for those who want a quick recap, the free hit chip allows managers to make unlimited transfers that apply for one game week. At the next deadline, their original squad is returned. While most managers are thinking about using it this week, some alternatively will wait till game week 25 with the FA Cup semifinals, causing further postponement. So I know you were pretty busy filling out your team before we started recording.
I was. I went ahead and activated my free hit chip, and now my FPL squad kind of looks like the Island of Misfit Toys plus Mo Salah. I am starting Asmir Begovic in goal. Then I have my standard back five of Nathan Aki, Moritz Bauer, Patrick Van Aanholt, Leighton Baines, Charlie Daniels, then in midfield, Yannick Bolasie, Mo Salah, Rajiv Vallampara, and then a front two of Cenk Tosun and Roberto Firmino. I'm currently sh shuffling back and forth on if I'm gonna give Salah the armband or just give it to Firmino and hope that Firmino outscores Salah, which would mean a huge rank boost because I assume that about 85% of active managers will likely captain Salah this game week.
I mean, I know I'm going to be captaining Salah. I feel like it's almost too risky to not at this point.
I'm playing essentially three Bournemouth defenders this week. I risk might as well be my middle name.
Had already used mine back on the first double game week of the season, so I do not have mine.
Yeah, you got a little overzealous with your chips this year.
I have Baines, Francis, Robertson, Shaqiri, Lewis Cook, Salah, Steve Meunier, and Firmino. And I have three players who will not be taking part. So
Damn it. I knew I was forgetting someone for this transfer period. Not
who'd you
Shaqiri.
forget? How'd you forget Shaqiri?
I don't know. I'm actually kicking myself about that.
Oh no, Chuck. Dude.
I mean,
All right.
I can still add him because my free hit's active and it doesn't matter how many transfers I make this week.
That's a good point. I mean, I just think he is a must for this week, no
No,
matter what.
you're right. That's why I'm angry at myself for not already having him in my lineup.
Before we, I got a really good Shaqiri stat for later on, so we'll hold the chatter on him and get into the first match. We're going to be talking about Bournemouth versus West Brom. The Cherries come in after a 4-1 defeat against Tottenham. Josh King is pushing for a start after making the bench last week. Meanwhile, West Brom are bottom of the table and 8 points from safety, and they're just not really good at all. So this is the week outside of Liverpool, I'd say they have the most favorable matchup.
Yeah, that would definitely be correct. As you could see, I like Bournemouth keeping a clean sheet at home in this one.
Yeah, West Brom have not scored in their last three away matches. They're going to be missing Nasser Chadli, James Morrison, Daniel Sturridge, and Gareth Barry. So they're banged up, and you factor that in with them just not being good at football, and it really sets up well for the Cherries. However, one thing I have noticed is that while Bournemouth have scored in their last 11 matches, they've only kept one clean sheet during that span.
Hey, it's always a time to buck the stats. 9 times out of 10, we throw out a stat and it gets thrown out the window anyway. So I'm throwing it out the window before we even talk about it.
So, looking at Taga, the guys I kind of pinpointed, Junior Stanislas, 46% owned, Charlie Daniels, 39, Begovic, 31, Adam Smith, 11. Out of those guys, I'm guessing the number one for you would be Stanislas. If
Yeah,
you
and
were
it ain't
picking
even
between,
close.
yeah, if you were between picking between Charlie Daniels and Adam Smith for the defense, which side would you lean on?
I like the consistency that Daniels normally has. It hasn't completely been there this year, But just over the course of his career, Daniels has usually been a more consistent option, whereas Smith has been your boom or bust option. And we're going to talk about a later fixture where I'm taking my boom or bust option for this week.
Yeah, I Smith made my column, which will be dropping hopefully tomorrow morning, just essentially saying that Bournemouth have scored 4 goals in their last 3 matches. He's played a hand on two. And with him playing on the right side of midfield, he has a little bit of an attacking upside. So where you probably won't be getting the volume of crosses that Daniels provides, Smith is going to be playing in a more advanced role. So, I mean, that was really the difference for me. Plus, I could not get Daniels in the league that I was targeting him in.
Sounds like a
But I
little
got to
bit of
put.
spite on your part.
Well, I mean, it's not spite. It's just, when life gives you lemons, sometimes you got to start Adam Smith.
So it's not spite, but it is essentially what you just said.
Is there anyone on West Brom that you're interested in?
I mean, the J. Rodriguez hype train is over. I mean, if I had to pick someone, gun to my head, it's Matt Phillips, because he's probably the most talented player they have left.
Yeah, he's owned in 52% of leagues, so he might be scooped if anyone had been looking at West Brom. The other guy I had noticed, just based upon ownership and what qualifies him for my column, would be Solomon Rondon. I don't really have much
Nope.
faith in him, but
Nope.
he's
I
available.
drafted him at the beginning of the year. I've never forgiven myself for it. Won't touch him anymore.
He is, however, currently available in 66% of leagues, so that's another forward to look at. I mean, I'm going cherries in this one. I'm going to say maybe 2-0.
I'd like that score line because that would line me up for a nice FPL boost.
Yeah, I don't. There's just nothing to like about West Brom at all.
I mean, they're already relegated.
They're done. And I just, outside of Matt Phillips, there's no one that I feel comfortable would gives me a chance at more than 8 points on a weekly
I
basis.
mean,
Even their defense.
even Matt Phillips, I don't feel comfortable with, so.
Yeah. So yeah, and I would stay away from, this is a real trap game for Ben Foster. If anyone had added him, I would definitely look at the other goalies
I thought
playing
every
this
game was a
week.
trap game for Ben Foster.
Huddersfield Crystal Palace is a little bit more intriguing for me. The Terriers are coming off a frustrating goalless draw with Swansea City. After the IU red card early in the match, the Terriers dominated pretty much, when I say the entire game, that is not an exaggeration. They dominated 81% of possession and put 15 of their 30 shots on target.
And how many goals did they have to show for it?
Zero.
I had the joy of covering that wonderful lineup game, and then I was just like, what the hell am I watching? Swansea literally sat back, played essentially a 5-3-1, and Steve Meunier finished nothing.
Yeah, I have Fabianski and Naughton in OFPL, so I was happy with that. But
Fabianski
I
had a
also,
wonderful day.
yeah, Fabianski snuck the Man of a Match award away from my boy Hajar Janaj, who had a hell of a day. Not to overload everyone with stats, but he converted 7 of his 21 attempted crosses, and he hit, sorry, he converted 7 of his 19 in open play and 8 of his 21 in total, which is the most I've seen this season.
Yeah, but it's really easy to have a hell of a day when you don't have to worry about defending.
That is fair. He did also create 8 chances, which is, I mean, that's
Absurd.
mind-blowing. Even for a game where they did dominate the entirety of possession and Swansea sat back, you don't even see like KDB putting up 8 created chances when Man City has their way with whoever they're playing. I think in the game when he had 3 assists, he had like 6 created chances. And that's why I'm giving him my stamp of approval for sleeper play of the week. He's available in 99% of leagues because I picked him up in one, and I'm assuming I'm probably the only person who has. But I would definitely give him a look in the Taga streaming land. I guess before we talk about more specific guys, Crystal Palace, they're coming off their 2-1 defeat at Chelsea, but Wilfried Zaha was back, and he got an assist. Chuck, you know who scored? Patrick
Oh
Van,
yeah, I was like,
motherfucking anhole.
I don't even know why I had to like think about that, because there's only one reason why you would ask that question.
Yeah, for those who follow us on Twitter, there was an exchange earlier this season with the Togger ranks where I was high talking about how I was hot on PVA, and I forget who it was, one of the guys from one of our boys from RotoWire was talking about how he was good a couple years ago, and I said he's still good. Now he's got goals in back-to-back matches,
I was
so
gonna say, and it only took you almost the entire season to get to bang your PVA drum.
yes, I love PVA. Because he was good a couple seasons ago, and he's still good when he has good service. I mean, his goal against United was just quick thinking a good finish, but now that Zaha's back, I think there's the potential for him to bang a couple more in the season.
Well, more importantly than Zaha being back, Ruben Loftus-Cheek is in training.
Yeah, Loftus-Cheek, Johan Gabay, and Mamadou Sakho were all back in training last week, so Palace is getting healthy at the right time.
And a healthy Palace is a mid-table squad.
Yeah, so to circle back, Huddersfield Palace, I'm not really sure what's going to happen in this one, just because we don't know what
Madness.
Palace, we don't know what Palace's lineup's going to be. But assuming that, I don't know what's, I don't know, maybe. So I guess outside of the guys who we want to see back who are in training,
Yeah,
who's
unfortunately,
the
I don't
guy
think
who?
many of those guys start outside of Zaha.
Yeah, so I mean. Outside of Zaha, who are you looking at from Crystal Palace this week?
I mean, I've added Patrick Van Aanholt, which means he's not going to do anything, because whenever I jump on a hype train, it very quickly crashes.
Well, PVA is an avid listener, so he's going to be like, well, Chuck picked me up. I can't score again. Sorry, Sean. But anyone in the midfield?
I mean, I've owned Johan Kabay all season, so hopefully.
Yeah, if Kabay is back, I mean, that's huge for this game. But I mean, he was averaging 9 points a game in Taga prior to getting injured, and he pretty much dictates that offense. And that team is leagues better with him and Zaha back there. I mean, that doesn't really come as a surprise for that statement, but still.
And I mean, I did add for this week Milivojevic and OFPL, just because he takes
Penalties.
sweet, sweet penalties.
Any interest in Benteke?
I thought about it. But
7.6.
well, but the big thing was just the fact that I only wanted to play two forwards, and unfortunately I feel like Sanctosin is a better option than Benteke this week.
Yeah, I mean that I wish I had still had my free hit chip, but what I guess to circle back a little bit, your thought was more on building the lineup you wanted from the players, or was it you had a formation set in mind and you wanted to fill that out?
I had a formation set in mind that I wanted to fill out, and then but it kind of still fits with the players that I wanted. Like, in a perfect world, I probably would have started a front three of Benteke, Tosin, and Firmino, but I like the potential rank upside of starting Aki, Daniels, and Begovic.
Plus, I mean, looking at all those matches, I mean, Liverpool Watford is the only one, based upon the over/under, that's predicted to have more than 2.5 goals.
Yeah.
So, it's probably a week to look at clean sheets, even though it's definitely a less attractive way to do it.
It's always a week to look at clean sheets.
Stoke City Everton. Now we'll get to my good Shaqiri stat. Shaqiri has set up 20% of Stoke's 100 or 318 shots this season and created 65 chances.
Only
Only
20%?
Pascal, yeah, only Pa, here's this thing though. only Pascal Gross at 22 has provided a higher share of his club's chances. So while that number percentage-wise is kind of low, it's crazy to see how vital he is to Stoke City.
It seems like both of, I mean, I guess this isn't counting secondary stuff though. Cause yeah. Like if you count secondary, that number for both of them is probably upwards of like 60.
Yeah. I mean, this is just in general with the numbers. We didn't go too specific on the detail.
Any dangerous attack for either of those teams runs through those two players.
I mean, it has to, but Everton, speaking of players who run their attack, are going to be without Gylfi Sigurdsson for potentially 6 to 8 weeks after he suffered a knee injury in the win over Brighton. So before we talk about the players we're looking at, the most pressing question is obviously who steps in for Everton, and then on top of that, how does the absence of Gylfi affect their formation?
I mean, unfortunately, it's not like their formation has been performing that well with Gylfi, as much as I love Gylfi. So I don't think there's that much room for a step back.
Yeah, and then I guess who you see coming in off the bench to start in place of him?
So I'd like to assume Yannick Bolasie, but it really depends on how they're attempting to line this up. Because if it's a 4-4-2, then it should be really both Bolasie and Calvert-Lewin starting. So the big thing is, what's the update on Walcott's injury?
Yeah, I was just about to mention that. Without him, that kind of changes how they're going to set up their how they're going to set up their wings. But from what I saw most recently, where is it? Walcott is at he has a 75% chance of playing. Now, we'll probably get a better update on that tomorrow or Friday when the reports come out. But I want to say it's towards the questionable side of being doubtful.
Yeah, because it's tough because you don't want Dominic Calvert-Lewin on the wing, even though Big Sam tried playing him there, because that neutralizes the fact that he's so good in the air.
Yeah, I mean, Big Sam, the last thing I saw, he pretty much was a little bit fearful in his post-match comments about what could happen. I mean, it was listed initially as a cramp and he should be okay, but because we haven't seen a more definitive update, it is a little bit worrisome.
Yeah, I was gonna say, like, a cramp can turn into a lot of things.
Yeah, because if it's muscular, then he'll definitely be out, but if it was a cramp, more of a contact knock or something, I could see him being back. But I guess either way, I guess Calvert-Lewin is the guy we would both like to see in there. But the problem with that being is what Big Sam wants to do with the formation. So I guess it's really a toss-up between him or Bolasie at this point.
Yeah, that's what I'd assume. Because essentially, without Gylfi, it's really hard to see them playing a 4-3-3.
Yeah, because then that's putting too much work on Rooney's legs.
I mean, Rooney should be sitting anyway, but that's not my decision here. That's
a whole other discussion. Yeah, I mean, they obviously you're going to have Guy and Davies in there no matter what.
The real big thing about this is the fact that Sanka scored in two straight goal games.
Yeah, which I was about to say. What is your thoughts on his little mini resurgence?
So, you can't really call it a resurgence. You really just had to call it him hopefully finally settling into Premier League. Because,
and, I mean, by resurgence, I mean him playing again.
Because, I mean, this is what I expected from him when he came, because he's a professional goal scorer. He just unfortunately started off on the wrong foot with his manager essentially saying, yeah, this guy wasn't my target, which, like, that has to just kill your confidence as a striker.
Yeah, he's got 2 goals on 4 shots over his last two matches. So he's doing kind of what Everton had hoped for. Is he? God, I don't see the thing with him though. So he's available. He's only owned in 32% of leagues right now.
Yeah,
So
and I
for this week,
snatched him up.
yeah, I know. For this week, he's one of the better options.
I'd hold him rest of the season.
You
I don't
would?
see a reason not to.
Yeah, I mean, if he's getting the time,
If he's
and
getting
then
the
if you.
time, Everton's getting healthy. You got Coleman and Baines running up the wings.
Yeah, and I mean, they have Man City, Liverpool, but then their other matches are Swansea, Newcastle, Huddersfield, Southampton, and West Ham. So it's not a terribly daunting run of fixtures. So I guess out of all the people who would be 1 week forwards to add, he probably has the better long-term upside.
Yeah, I
In
mean,
terms of.
Palace probably has the best run-in at the end of the season out of any of the teams that are in this. But Benteke's Benteke.
Yeah. I mean, Solaroff is another guy I like. So he's up there too, but obviously Tosin offers more in terms of goal scoring.
Yeah, I love Solaroff and Tauge, but OFPL, eh.
I guess sticking with our little target chat, Stoke City in terms of guys to target for this week, the options that are available are mainly toward on the defense and in midfield. You got Darren Fletcher, he's available in 80% of leagues.
Eh.
My boy Ndiaye, he's available in almost 90% of leagues. And then in the defense, you got Eric Peters and Bauer, both owned in less than 80% of leagues.
Yeah, so not the greatest crop of options outside of Ndiaye, because Bauer started off hot, and then he's kind of tapered off. And like, because the big thing with him was we were hoping for some assists with all the crosses he was putting in, and it just hasn't happened.
Yeah, I mean, he came in, he got off to a rip-roaring start, but unfortunately, he hasn't been creating the chances over the last couple of matches,
And even
which
more
is kind of leaving.
unfortunately, the injury to Diouf ain't gonna help a thing.
Yeah, not at all. But looking at Ndiaye, he actually, since he's arrived 5 matches ago, he's attempted the most shots out of anyone on Stoke City. He's attempted 13, and I think the next guy is Shaqiri with 6.
Really?
Yeah, I was very surprised when I saw that number today.
That's. I thought I watched a lot of him, and I'm still surprised by that.
I mean, the thing with that number though is it doesn't. I didn't do the individual breakdown to where that it's been on the pitch, and Shaqiri does have 3 goals from his last 6 on target shots on target. But I mean, going against an Everton side that gives up the second most shots per game in the league, there is the potential for. You know, statistically foreshadowed upside with Ndiaye. Plus, he does the defensive work too.
Yeah.
And I mean, I don't. Darren Fletcher's, whatever. And
Yeah,
then the other
no,
guy.
don't touch Fletcher if you're
Yeah,
listening
the
to
other.
this. And if you do, you're just asking to lose this week.
Yeah, and I mean, the other guy you could potentially look at is Joe Allen for the chances he's been creating, but he's owned in 60% of the league,
See, the
so he's going
big
to be
thing
harder to
with
get.
Joe Allen is just the fact that while he's creating chances, there's no forward to put them away. And. Wait, 'cause usually if Shaqiri scores a goal, no one's assisting it.
Yeah, he's a self-creator. And on top of that, I mean, you have Doof's out. Yes, I got a start last week.
Nope.
Yeah, and he's that's a real
I forgot
downgrade.
he even played in the Premier League for most of this season.
Yeah, I mean, I would have liked to see Crouch get the start up top, but I
At this
mean,
point, we'll see Berahino before the end of the season.
oh God. A 37-year-old Crouch is better than a fully fit, however old Berahino is.
Gosh, you're just making me think back to how Toni Pulis ruined him by not letting him move to Spurs.
Moving on to the last match from the short slate, Liverpool hosting Watford. Well, I mean, I'm assuming it's going to be all Liverpool.
I'm
Moha,
not so sure.
you don't. What's your? you have some belief in Watford that I'm not aware of?
I mean, there's a reason why I sat. Well, I actually transferred out Andrew Robertson on my free hit team. While I do think that Liverpool is by far the better side in this match, I don't think they could stop Watford from scoring because Troy Deeney's back.
Yeah, I mean that is fair. I'm thinking it's probably going to be along the lines of 3-1, maybe 4-1. I don't think they'll be able to nip a point off this game. But Watford have proven able to pop up with goals in the later stages of matches of late. We talked about it a little bit before with obviously Salah and Firmino, who's better to give the captain armband to. And the statistic I want to point out in favor of Salah, he's been directly involved in 47% of Liverpool's goals this season, which is the highest ratio in the league. He's got 24 goals and 8 assists. So that's kind of why I'll be giving him the captaincy this week.
I'm just a contrarian, which is why I probably won't be giving him the captaincy this week. But that's neither
I
here
mean,
nor there.
I was gonna say where you're at though, you need to kind of you need something funny to happen to gain more ground.
It sucks because like after I got into the like the top 100K, it's just been nothing but red arrows.
Yeah, I mean it's cutthroat that high up the table. Looking, I guess, at Liverpool's guys, so you're saying you're not really. I know they've been giving up goals, but are you really that not confident in their defense?
I mean, just in OFPL, if I don't think you're keeping a clean sheet and I don't really like your chances for an assist this week, I have no reason to play you.
What are your thoughts on Oxlade-Chamberlain?
I mean, I love Alex Oxlade-Chamberlain. I still think he's an insane value in OFPL for his price tag.
Yeah,
But
5.6.
if I'm playing three Liverpool players, it's damn sure going to be Salah, Firmino, and Mane.
Yeah, exactly. Especially against a club like Watford. I mean, looking at Watford, there is definitely value in Tauge. I guess there's not going to be a clean sheet, but I mean,
Wingbacks.
yeah, I was going to say, looking at their wing backs, maybe hoping either Hojbjerg, Jan Mott, or Firmino gets an assist.
There's also the fact
Obviously.
that at least one of them will be playing forward, and the
Yeah.
whichever one isn't playing forward is still basically going to be playing forward. Like, does any team throw their defense forward more than Watford?
Yeah, it's crazy because I just at this point, the only constant with them is that when you look at the heat map, one of their wing backs is going to be mainly on the other team's half.
Well, and there's the fact that Richarlison has forgotten how to score an assist.
Yeah, what has happened to him?
It's called being 20 and hitting the Premier League wall, and that's why I had him at the beginning of the season. I jumped off of him, and I haven't touched or mentioned him since.
So last week he had 11 points against Arsenal. Can you take a
I think
guess at
that's
how
about his
many
ceiling.
take a guess at how many matches he went before that without a double digit game week in Taga?
12.
10. So that was a good guess. But still, I mean, going from being one of possibly the best forwards in the beginning of the season, I mean, he's 90% owned in leagues right now.
I remember at the beginning of the season, I fought tooth and nail with Benji as he was doing his Togger ranks, that he needed to rank Richarlison. And essentially, after Richarlison became a consistent top 15 forward with Benji, he has now kind of sucked. So actually, I think I'm going to blame Benji for Richarlison.
Yeah, Benji, feel free to respond to Chuck calling you out on pretty much the fall of Richarlison. Looking, I guess, at the rest of the guys, anyone in the midfield that sparks your interest? Outside of Decore, obviously.
Perea. He's been playing, actually doing a decent job in orchestrating the Watford attack. Not necessarily as good of a job as I would like him to do, but good enough to keep his spot.
Yeah, so the only reason why he didn't make my column this week is he hasn't been playing 90 minutes.
Which is because they're trying to ease Will Hughes in.
So, I mean, while he has 21, 3, 9, 7, and 6 in his last five matches, he hasn't, I don't think he's played 90 minutes in any of those games.
I mean, at this point, he's made of glass, so I don't know if you want him to play 90 minutes.
Yeah, I know, but I mean, looking at a week where you're already going to be struggling to fill out your team, I just feel like it's better to get a guy you know is going to get at least 80 minutes. Now, I mean, that I guess that sounds
Yeah,
kind of
but see,
relative, but with
the
a player
tough thing
like
is just the fact that there's a lot of guys that'll play 80 minutes, still get less points than Perea.
that is fair. But I mean, against Liverpool, if they were playing anyone else, I would not have thought about it at all. I wouldn't have second guessed it.
I mean,
But just
that's
against
fair.
Liverpool.
It's just I don't think Liverpool's as airtight as their recent defensive record says they are.
Yeah, I agree with that. I just think that the pace and the tempo they play at, priority is a glass giant. So depending upon how that match goes, I mean, if they're in it, he could, be around in the later stages. But if Watford goes down two, maybe three goals early, I could see him being pulled by the 65th minute. So that is my one concern. Although, I mean, with the short stack of slate and half the guys you normally want not playing, I guess he I would upgrade him for this week. I mean, you could do a lot worse.
Yeah.
I mean, that's why I would potentially lean towards Etienne Capoue over him.
I mean, I'd hope for a Will Hughes start, but I don't think that's going to happen.
Yeah, I mean, what if Hughes gets back in the team for the last couple of matches this season, what value would you slap on him?
Midfielder four?
So you think, I mean, obviously I don't think he's going to be doing what he did before, but you think he'd be serviceable enough
I
for a
think
10 team
he's
league?
Yeah, I think he's consistent enough for 8 to 12. Maybe gets an assist, gets you a 16 point week. That's
Yeah.
perfectly fine by me.
Yeah, I mean, he did have an assist against West Brom 2 weeks ago. But that kind of does it for match preview section. We're going to move on to some listener questions. Once again, thank you, everyone. We had a phenomenal time going through the questions, so much so that we actually are going to be starting an FPL 360 Twitter account.
Yes, we will.
So,
Can
yeah.
clean up our mentions so that we can actually give even more time to your questions.
Yeah, I was gonna say so they don't get lost in the interesting discussion threads we've had, but there will be more information coming out hopefully tomorrow, maybe on Friday, from both Chuck and I's Twitters. But let's get down to the questions. The first one, we got a real pressing one, and we'll start with this one, Chuck. Why is David Silva bald now?
So my answer from this is the fact that Pep Guardiola thought that he needed a coach on the pitch at all times. But to actually be able to channel your inner Pep, you have to shave your head to reach your inner Zen.
Yeah,
And David Silva stepped up.
and when they ruled out wearing fashionable scarves on the pitch, the next thought was, of course, shave your head. So thank you for that question, Zach Thomas. Forgot your name, didn't mention your name in the beginning. But yeah, I mean, I think the other one is that maybe he's losing his hair, but I think trying to mimic Pep's hairstyle is probably a stronger choice for why he's done that. Moving on to the next question from John Staples. Is a defender with a bigger upside, such as Patrick Van Aanholt, more useful this week than a solid defender who will get decent points, such as Ake?
So for me, it's tough because I usually like to balance the risk versus reward. Like I'd like to have probably about two-thirds of my lineup be guys that I know what I'm gonna get from, and then one-third just be straight boom or bust guys. But in a week like this one, where the average person's getting nothing because they didn't plan for it, I'm rolling PVA and as many high upside guys as I can, just because anything you get over zero is a plus.
Yeah, I mean, I'm always going to say PVA over everyone else, but the way I usually try and construct my teams is getting one of the premium center backs on a team where I know he's going to get clean sheets when I draft in the beginning of the season, and then rounding my defense out with either set piece takers and or fullbacks. So that's obviously guys like PVA, Christian Fuchs when he was in the first team, Leighton Baines when he plays. And I think this week is perfect for Van Aanholt just because as long as Crystal Palace don't get a red card, it's not going to, Huddersfield's not going to dominate possession like they did last week against Swansea. So I would definitely go with him. Although it's interesting with Ake, though, just because they're playing at home against West Brom.
I
But I
mean,
guess,
I'd want to play both.
yeah, honestly, if you can, I would start both those guys. But I think upside this week is probably the best of any to go with the upside. And that's mainly just because he gets up and down the flank. Or with Ake, you're going to have to hope that they get a ton of corners. And then a problem right there is West Brom are very good in the air for all their things they're not good at. That's their one strength. Next one comes from Jake Berman. In an 8-team league, is Jesse Lingard worth dropping?
In an 8-team league, I don't honestly know why you're still owning him right now. So, yeah.
Yeah, Lingard is really, his value is really tied to 12-team leagues and some 10-team if you have a shallow midfield pool. But by all means, you can get rid of him in an 8-team league because you can do a lot better than him, especially with the resurgence of Rashford once Martial's back. I don't even know if he'll be in the starting 11 unless he starts scoring goals again. Although I could see why you've held on to him just because he was doing so good for so long. But I think the Lingard train has sailed for this season.
Yeah, that's probably a fair statement.
Yeah, and our last question comes from friend of the show, Tyler Dunn. Who's a better goalkeeper, Joe Hart or Ron Weasley?
No, he said, who's a better keeper? There's a very specific difference there because.
I don't think so. I think Ron Weasley would be a better goalkeeper in the Premier League than Joe Hart.
I mean, in reality, if I'm playing Quidditch or soccer, I'd still probably take Ron Weasley. Just because he will put his entire body on the line, something that.
Plus he's not Joe Hart.
Well, yeah, this is another alternate name for this show could be the Anyone But Joe Hart show.
Hell, I'd take Ron Burgundy over Joe Hart at this point. At least he'd give really good halftime pep talks. All right. Well, that does it for this episode of FPL 360. I'm Sean Sullivan.
And I'm Chuck Booth.
And best of luck with the short stack for game week 31.